I thought him the queerest old Quaker I ever saw, especially as Peleg, his friend and old shipmate, seemed such a blusterer. But I said nothing, only looking round me sharply. Peleg now threw open a chest and, drawing forth the ship's articles, placed pen and ink before him and seated himself at a little table. I began to think it was high time to settle with myself at what terms I would be willing to engage for the voyage. I was already aware that in the whaling business they paid no wages, but all hands, including the captain, received certain shares of the profits, called lays, and that these lays were proportioned to the degree of importance pertaining to the respective duties of the ship's company. I was also aware that, being a green hand at whaling, my own lay would not be very large. But considering that I was used to the sea, could steer a ship, splice a rope, and all that, I made no doubt that from all I had heard I should be offered at least the 275th lay, that is, the 275th part of the clear net proceeds of the voyage, whatever that might eventually amount to. And though the 275th lay was what they call a rather long lay, yet it was better than nothing, and if we had a lucky voyage might pretty nearly pay for the clothing I would wear out on it, not to speak of my 3 years' beef and board, for which I would not have to pay one stiver. It might be thought that this was a poor way to accumulate a princely fortune, and so it was, a very poor way indeed. But I am one of those that never take on about princely fortunes, and am quite content if the world is ready to board and lodge me while I am putting up at this grim sign of the thundercloud. Upon the whole, I thought that the 275th lay would be about the fair thing, but would not have been surprised had I been offered the 200th, considering I was of a broad-shouldered make. But one thing, nevertheless, that made me a little distrustful about receiving a generous share of the profits was this. Ashore, I had heard something of both Captain Peleg and his unaccountable old crony Bildad, how that they, being the principal proprietors of the Pequod, therefore the other and more considerable and scattered owners, left nearly the whole management of the ship's affairs to these two. And I did not know but what the stingy old Bildad might have a mighty deal to say about shipping hands, especially as I now found him on board the Pequod, quite at home there in the cabin, and reading his Bible as if at his own fireside. Now, while Peleg was vainly trying to mend a pen with his jackknife, old Bildad, to my no small surprise, considering that he was such an interested party in these proceedings, Bildad never heeded us, but went on mumbling to himself out of his book, "Lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth, where moth—" "Well, Captain Bildad," interrupted Peleg, "what do you say? What lay shall we give this young man?" "Thou knowest best," was the sepulchral reply. "The 777th wouldn't be too much, would it? Where moth and rust do corrupt, but lay—" "Lay, indeed," thought I, "and such a lay. The 777th. Well, old Bildad, you are determined that I, for one, shall not lay up many lays here below, where moth and rust do corrupt. It was an exceedingly long lay, that, indeed, and though from the magnitude of the figure it might at first deceive a landsman, yet the slightest consideration will show that, though 777 is a pretty large number, yet when you come to make a teenth of it, you will then see, I say, that the 777th part of a farthing is a good deal less than 777 gold doubloons, and so I thought at the time."
"Why, blast your eyes, Bildad," cried Peleg, "thou dost not want to swindle this young man. He must have more than that."
777th, again said Bildad, without lifting his eyes, and then went on mumbling, "For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also."
"I'm going to put him down for the 300th, said Peleg. "Do you hear that, Bildad? The 300th lay, I say."
Bildad laid down his book and, turning solemnly towards him, said, "Captain Peleg, thou hast a generous heart, but thou must consider the duty thou owest to the other owners of this ship, widows and orphans, many of them, and that if we too abundantly reward the labors of this young man, we may be taking the bread from those widows and those orphans. The 777th lay, Captain Peleg."
"Thou, Bildad," roared Peleg, starting up and clattering about the cabin. "Blast ye, Captain Bildad, if I had followed thy advice in these matters, I would afore now had a conscience to lug about that would be heavy enough to founder the largest ship that ever sailed round Cape Horn."
"Captain Peleg," said Bildad steadily, "thy conscience may be drawing 10 inches of water or 10 fathoms, I can't tell.
But as thou art still an impenitent man, Captain Peleg, I greatly fear lest thy conscience be but a leaky one, and will in the end sink thee foundering down to the fiery pit, Captain Peleg. Fiery pit, fiery pit, ye insult me, man. Past all natural bearing, ye insult me. It's all fired outrage to tell any human creature that he's bound to hell. Flukes and flames! Bildad, say that again to me and start my soul bolts, but I'll swallow a live goat with all his hair and horns on. Out of the cabin, you canting drab-coloured son of a wooden gun, a straight week with you!
As he thundered out this, he made a rush at Bildad, but with a marvellous oblique sliding celerity, Bildad for that time eluded him. Alarmed at this terrible outburst between the two principal and responsible owners of the ship, and feeling half a mind to give up all idea of sailing in a vessel so questionably owned and temporarily commanded, I stepped aside for the door to give egress to Bildad, who, I made no doubt, was all eagerness to vanish from before the awakened wrath of Peleg. But to my astonishment, he sat down again on the transom very quietly and seemed to have not the slightest intention of withdrawing. He seemed quite used to impenitent Peleg and his ways. As for Peleg, after letting off his rage as he had, there seemed no more left in him. And he, too, sat down like a lamb, though he twitched a little, as if still nervously agitated.
"Phew!" he whistled at last. "The squall's gone off to leeward, I think. Bildad, I used to be good at sharpening a lance. Mend that pen, will you? My jackknife here needs the grindstone." "That's he, thank you, Bildad. Now then, my young man, Ishmael is thy name, didn't you say? Well then, down you go here, Ishmael, for the 300th lay."